It is 5:55 here on the Hard Line. We are about 15 minutes away from Community Quick Hits with David. Sturm Center will round things out. Probably was about a year ago that our next guest wandered up here and we had conversations. A lot has changed since then, but he is back. That voice you hear is of Tim DeLauder of Trip and Daisy.
Yeah.
Of the Polyphonic Spree. A Dallas icon, if you will. Tim, how are you, buddy?
I'm doing good. It's good to be back in the saddle again, guys. Thanks for having me.
We love it when you come up here.
Yeah. I'm bringing gifts.
You do, man. You've got cool gifts. We were just talking about that. The fact that you had the foresight when your whole world was changing, right? I mean, you were literally exploding in popularity and your band was going crazy, but you kept all the goodies that you got over a 30-year period.
I did. I can't believe it, man. I've kept... Even when we got dropped from the label back then from Island, the guys called me and go, do you want all this Tripping Daisy stuff, these records and things? Because we don't, you know, and I'm like, yeah, please ship them to me. So they send me this palette of LPs, of albums. I couldn't believe it, just free. And so, yeah, I had this.
I got my own stuff.
Yeah. And they all had the stamps in them. They were from 1995. This was back then. And so they still had a big stock of them. We got dropped from them in 98. But I've always kind of been a pack rat about that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, and I would keep merch, t-shirts that we made and stickers and patches and hats. And, you know, we'd get stuff made. I'd put a little bit to the side and just keep hoarding this stuff. And so I've got this Tripping Daisy vault of just incredible things from back then.
Do you still have t-shirts?
I have some t-shirts.
Is it like a hoarder house situation or do you have like a storage unit?
I have a storage unit that's like a hoarder situation. And so, yeah, all that stuff's in there. And yeah, I have some t-shirts too.
I want to buy some t-shirts.
Yeah, I've got crazy stuff. Posters, flyers.
You have enough band shirts, Gordon.
I never have enough. I don't have a Trippin' Daisy shirt.
Yeah.
I was going to buy one.
I can set you up with that.
Okay.
Yeah, all right. Sure. Yeah.
So the show, you guys, there was an article that came out in the morning news earlier today, as a matter of fact.
Cool.
And about the tour, which starts in Dallas, and we are, what, 2 weeks away, a week and a half out?
About 10 days, yeah.
Okay, so was it Saturday night?
Saturday night, the 21st of June. It's coming up, guys.
It was so much fun last year when you guys had this show at the Bomb Factory. And a lot, my wife and I were there, and... You know what I'm getting ready to ask about?
Oh, the guy? Yeah.
is he okay?
Guy. He's okay. He's my dear friend from junior high. It's,
dude.
Crazy.
So near the end of the show, a guy jumps up on stage. And if you've been to the Bomb Factory before, you know that there's like a gap between the stage and the crowd. And there's like a metal
barrier. Like a photographer's pit.
Yeah.
The security
poor
pit.
Guy.
And it's it's a hardy jump for like a kid that's trying to do it. And so
it go so well.
It went as poorly as it possibly could go.
It couldn't gone any worse, you know.
And what was the injury? Because I just saw a face smash straight down on a metal pipe.
It took my breath away. I mean, I froze and
you're in mid song.
I was in mid song of My Umbrella, and it was at the end, and I was like, holy, oh my, I couldn't believe it. And I'm just waiting to see if he's going to move. I mean, he slapped that rail. Right with his face.
Ugh.
He broke his jaw. His jaw shifted, broke his tooth. His legs got really mangled because he kind of, what happened is he ran up and jumped on this light bar that was on the front of the stage and he leaped off of that. And when he did, the light bar went out from underneath his feet. So he didn't get any,
he got
air,
no leverage,
none. And he just went face first in this thing. And then his body was like an upside down, like a U. His knees built bent backwards, and it was just like, it couldn't have been any worse situation. It was one of the most violent things I've ever seen before.
And I was up high and saw it, you know, from that standpoint, and it looked way worse from up there too. It was like, oh my God.
It was bad. It was so bad. And I as soon as I finished the song, I went off stage and checked on him, and he was fine. He refused to go to the hospital, and they kept trying to take him to the hospital, and he wouldn't go. And it's like, 'cause he's stubborn like that. But
well, you know what? It added to the legacy of the band and rock and roll in general, man. It was awesome. That was a sold out packed show.
Yeah.
And you guys killed it. So I was reading the article earlier today, and we talked about this a couple of different times, but and the tour, how many cities you going to?
We're out for a month. It's about 25 dates.
Oh, wow.
So,
yeah. So, are you guys going to do new songs?
We're going to do songs that no one's ever heard live before.
Okay.
And we're going to do songs that no one's ever probably heard before, but they were songs that we had written in back in the day.
So cutting room stuff?
Yeah. And, which is pretty good stuff when you go back and hear it, but you'll hear a little bit of that and a couple of surprises. And, yeah, it's going to be fun.
Is it the same band as you took out last time? The same guys?
Same guys. And, yeah, we leave from here. We play Bomb Factory. The next night's Oklahoma City, and then just kind of keeps going all the way up to Montreal and then back down Toronto. And
dang.
So, yeah.
How many shows?
About 25, something
okay.
like that.
Wow. Montreal's a good spot this time of year, too.
Yeah. I mean, believe it or not, the band was huge in Canada.
No kidding.
Back then. And especially in the French part in Quebec and in Montreal, we were freaking massive. I Got a Girl video played constantly. And so we were just a massive hit. The band went gold, in that country, and it was crazy, man. It was pandemonium.
So y'all went up there and played multiple times, I'm assuming?
All the time.
Yeah.
Because it was so huge. They kept having us come back there and play. And we were playing, you know, places that held 5,000-10,000 people. It was just nonstop filling them up.
So I've got some college kids in my family now. My kids are growing up, I guess, even though that's a good debate.
Yeah.
But we were having a good music talk, which I bet everyone our age has with their kids at some point about how music used to be, or more importantly, how we consumed it. Whether it was Walkmans or fast forwarding on a tape cassette to get to our favorite songs, or just like, I'm telling you, Tim, if you would have tried to explain Spotify to 20-year-old us on how you're going to have every song that's ever been recorded searchable and playable instantaneously, we would have thought,
you're insane.
Yeah, like that can't possibly exist.
Yeah, but like I would spend entire days at used CD stores
yes.
trying to find that one thing that I was missing.
That's yeah. right.
And yeah. now you can just look it up in 5 seconds.
But also today, as good as it is, like the order of songs on an album doesn't matter as much, because who listens to entire albums unless they're old?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know. What does your brain do when you think about how it was and how it is, just the whole way the music industry works?
Well, what I do is I try to come up with a way to pioneer the way of getting back to listening to albums again.
Yeah.
This is a great segue, by the way, that you brought this up, because I did these listening experiences, and I think I talked to you guys about it, where mm-hmm. I wanted people to hear this album, the latest Spree album, from start to finish,
yes.
not just go through song by song. So I thought, well, how can I do this? I'll have a captive audience. I'll get the Sprinter van. I'll put sound system in there. I had 12 speakers and tripods, and I'll head out on the road and I'll do these pop-up listening experiences. I had moving blankets where people could lay down, a couple of generators. I'll head out on the road and say, I'm going to be at this location at this time. If you're there, come on out. It's free. You'll listen to the record, look at the stars. And that's how I did it. I couldn't even release my record because I was so upset that people weren't going to hear this as an album.
Yeah.
That was the way that I did it. So I went out there and did that till the money ran out for about a month. And it was crazy. It was successful. People loved the experience of doing that. And then got back and I was talking to my friend Scott about, you know, what had just been happening. He'd been following along. And Scott Berman used to do all the visuals for Tripping Daisy. And he and I have been talking about doing a planetarium show, dome theater show, based on music and doing visuals and an immersive experience.
Mm-hmm.
And so we came up with this film that we had made, and it's out right now, called Resolution. And you can see it at the Omni in Fort Worth.
Oh, cool.
It's also in Denton at the planetarium there. And then it just got into the Psych Museum in Montreal. It's going to be showing up in different places. But what it is, it's a new way of listening to albums. It's like you go there and you listen to the album from top to bottom, but it's also by different animators from all over the world that have done song by song, and we've created an experience to listen to albums. So to me, it's like you kind of have to create a new avenue for people, just like that's going on,
yeah,
to kind of combat it, but also introduce another way to have entertainment, you know?
Well, and right over there on those chairs are that's one of the press kits,
yeah,
that the late, great Chris Penn sent up here to promote that show.
Yeah, that was when it was called Atmosphere. We changed the name, but yeah, there you go. That's a nice little thing you should
see. That's cool, yeah.
So having you here today, it's I love having you, but immediately when I heard the news about Brian Wilson passing away, I'm like, wow, well, now I'm really glad that Tim's coming up, because I don't want to say you guys were friends, but you did know him and met him a couple of times.
Yeah.
And the first time I heard Polyphonic Spree, the first thing I thought of was just the oddity of Pet Sounds and all the things that were in Brian Wilson's head. And what did that guy mean to a guy like you?
You know, gosh, man, those songs, those records were, especially Pet Sounds, had a profound effect on me as far as the Spree. But a lot of that sunny pop music did at the time to kind of help cultivate that band, my band. But yeah, just the way that he would use melody and kind of have these adventurous arrangements and turns in the songs with melody, it was like unparalleled, you know. The guy was off the charts, but yeah, we did have an opportunity. We played with he was doing Smile. This is the beginning when he was doing Smile, coming back out and doing it for the first time at the Hollywood Bowl in Los Angeles.
What year was that? You remember?
2005.
Okay. So you guys were close to being, when did you guys start?
2000.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah. So it was kind of at the height of things happening for the Spree. And so I just scored a film called Thumbsucker, and, the director was there, and there was like, we're doing kind of press for that as well, but we were also the opening band for Brian Wilson doing Smile. And yeah, I met the guy, and it wasn't like you would think. Like he had a person that was walking from place to place.
Yeah.
He didn't really engage that well.
No, I don't think he ever did.
No, it was, you know.
It wasn't that lunatic doctor. They had parted ways by then.
Yeah, they had parted ways.
Yeah.
I think he was a bit shell-shocked from that whole experience. It was literally like, you know, we were getting a picture made, and his, quote, handler was like, Brian, you need a smile. And he went from deadpan to like this.
Yeah.
Just putting a smile on, and we took the picture, and I was like, that's how I first met him. I didn't hear him play a note yet. So it was really, I was kind of shocked. I didn't know is he going to be able to do the show? It was very distant out there, not very talkative or anything. And, so that was kind of weird for me, but then he comes out on the stage, and I'm out there, and he's walking over his piano, and he sits down, and, I'm watching, and I'm looking at he has an iPad there, and it's got, you know, some lyrics and, like what the song titles are. And then, it's like after the song title, it said smile, you know, like he's supposed to smile after he plays. And literally he would sit down and play these songs and sing, and he would just totally come to life. And then as soon as the song is over, he'd put that smile on his face that he had with me in there and then go back to being serious and then playing the music again. It was all about the music. It's like once the guy was playing the music, it was just, he was
that's
alive.
Like, that's like
Campbell.
Tony Bennett at the end.
Yeah.
Like, you know, just,
and Glenn
just,
Campbell.
They can channel the music, but otherwise they're not there.
Yeah. It's just a recall that they've got. And, it's just in you. He couldn't even help it, you know? And he was just flat out amazing.
That's cool.
Yeah.
I mean, for somebody in your shoes and doing what you do to be able to have that, to cross paths like that is crazy.
I've had some amazing moments. I cannot believe all the things that I've been able to do. It's just, it's kind of outrageous, you know?
That's awesome.
So the gig is next Saturday. It is at the Bomb Factory, which is about as good as it gets in this area for sure.
Yep.
And I would assume are you selling tickets via the bomb? What is it? What do you got to do? Just the typical avenues?
It's the, here we go. It's AXS. Go there and you can get your tickets. It's through the Bomb Factory AXS.
Okay.
And we've got some a couple of bands. I've got this band from Houston called Jump Rope that's opening up. I love these guys. It's three kids that are in the band, and then Julian Moss is opening up, who's a graduate from Booker T. He's
going to be
playing. So get there early. Doors are at 7. I think Julian Moss goes on at 7:55. And then it just kind of unfolds. But
and this is not to bring it down, but this is the first time you guys are going to be out on the road without Chris.
Yeah.
Do you have anything special, like a tribute, throughout the shows?
We've got some things that are going on. That's been a difficult thing.
Imagine.
It's nothing that you get over. You know, it's just kind of like time kind of goes by, and it may get a little bit easier, but there's not a minute that goes by that Chris doesn't cross my mind. He was the first phone call I'd make every morning, and we talk, not only just a dear friend, but is also my business partner, and handled everything through Tripping Daisy and Polyphonic Spree, so in the record store. So it's been, everyone deals with this in a different way. I've never had anybody this close to me go, and this has been one of the hardest times for me, but I'm, you know, like I said, it's weird. It's like Chris is supposed to go on this tour, and you know, and he's not here, and I'm kind of handling these things that I used to do back in my 20s. But the world is different, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I'm doing the best I can, trying to get it going and keep it going. And it helps with with what is going on of missing him.
Well, his impact, I mean, you know, from our perspective, like, I mean, the guy was such a titan in the scene here.
Yeah.
You know, I know personally in your scene as a friend, but just the way that he even dealt with us, and he was constantly listening to us and sending texts, and the sweetest guy you could possibly meet.
He loved you guys. He loved the show. He was always, he was a P1 from the beginning and always there. His whole family is. And it's a shift on the planet without him, for sure. It's going to be felt for quite some time. Those big shoes to fill, and I don't know if they'll ever be filled. He had an enormous amount of energy, and his ability to multitask are unparalleled to anybody I've ever known. And it kind of had to be that way with he and I. We were just constantly going and doing things and coming up with ideas and making them happen. And you have to have somebody like that in order to make it work. And he was such a beautiful human being. And I'll miss him dearly forever.
Well, our condolences you and his family and friends. And
yeah,
I mean, it's horrible. You're never going to stop missing him, but the outpouring of love from all directions had to really make you feel fulfilled and know that his legacy lives on.
Yeah, he could not go through life, especially around here, and it not be like that. He affected a lot of people. He was a massive presence and a beautiful spirit. And I was walking out the door. I see him every day. I got his picture right before I walk out, and it's just like, God, I just can't. It's just ridiculous that this happened to him, because he's one of these people that you need to have out here to do what we all need as human beings. He was he made that stuff happen, and we needed him, and I need him, and so yeah, he's going to be missed.
Well, the dude's spirit will carry on through you guys and many other avenues, his family and everything else.
So he'll be on that tour for sure. Yeah. I mean, I know he's going to be on the tour.
Yep. Yeah. All right, dude. The show is next Saturday. Everybody get their tickets to go see Trippin' Daisy. It is one hell of a show. So can't wait to be there and see it again, Tim.
Yeah, it's a nice reunion. It's good to have everybody back again. So, yeah, come on out.
Awesome. All right, brother. Thank you very much.
Thank you, guys.
Tim DeLauder of Trippin' Daisy and the Spree.